leave now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty. And yeah, welcome once again to the best political podcast in the country. The second most developed country in the region, for all those that are listening.
Not just the region, in Africa, my friend, in Africa.
In Africa, the second behind South Africa.
Just behind South Africa, we are the second.
So that would mean our podcast is obviously high up there.
In on the continent, yeah, like there's nothing like it.
Yeah,
making
surely.
Strides, my friend, making strides. What's been going on? Yeah. It's actually been a long time since we've been on this mic.
It has.
Our apologies to our listeners. I know some people have been contacting us and complaining that they are suffering from withdrawal symptoms, which means we're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
Shout out to us. And thank you to those who are listening. Unfortunately, life has been quite busy the past couple of weeks. So finding
what are my sanctions?
Nandaro Anema sanctions. You know, being part of paid ZANPF Twitter, kune factionalism irikuitiko futi ikoko. Saka I had to protect my interests and sort of sort out those things. But I think I had ndakwana. The successionists will not overthrow us.
The regime change agenda will not be successful. But today is the 7th of May. We haven't put out a podcast in about 2 weeks. And in those 2 weeks, a lot has happened. A lot of movements, a lot of changes, and a lot of the same things. So it's one of those ironies where the more things change, the more they stay the same, maybe.
Quite right. Like,
what are we going to talk about today?
Today, we're going to have to... Let's look at what's actually been going on. So there's all these MOUs that were signed, Nema opposition, and they sort of got together. And yesterday, 6 May, they had their first, I think we can call it their first rally, right? Or they had their first outing. Also, among the activists, there was an MOU of some sort, or citizens' movements coming together as well. They released a statement. Patson Zamara is in hospital, or was, I'm not sure if he's been released yet, but he's an activist who was arrested and apparently kept in Chikurubi. He was arrested because he missed a court date or something, so there's that happening with the activists. In the ruling party, our president has said we are the second most developed country on the continent. This was at the World Economic Forum, and then we have issues of factionalism and more factionalism and more factionalism.
As per usual, our favorite word. I think to our listeners, if you ever are so desperate and you want to play a drinking game with Politics and Beyond, you should take a shot every time the word factionalism comes up, and I'm sure you'll be quite.
I don't know if there's enough bottles to go around for that, because. We've exhausted that one, but it keeps, you know, it's what's happening in the ruling party. It's just, I don't get how they've managed to let this go on for so long, and no one has actually, you know, like done something drastic to end it or taken advantage of the situation.
Yeah. We'll so see. I mean, while we're on the topic, I know it's a bit backwards. We might as well just. Dive straight into the actual issues of factionalism. Any updates on that, and you know what's been happening in the ruling party, so that we don't tease for too long.
So in the Sunday Mail today, it alleges that Comrade Kasukwere is in a plot with is collaborating with Julius Malema to topple President Mugabe. So as Julius, last month, I think it was, said that the people in ZANPF are cowards, and he basically called out a whole bunch of people. And this now report says that Kasukwere's brother is always in South Africa meeting up with Malema, and Kasukwere, when he was Minister of Youth, brought Malema to Zim the one time, I think it was 2010 or something like that. And so they're in... cahoots to try and topple
the government.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds quite ridiculous to me, personally.
I thought the Sunday... Who's the editor of the Sunday Mail? I thought it was a serious newspaper.
Mabasa Sasa, I'm not going to comment on one of our publications because I love my job.
No.
But it sounds far-fetched. I mean, come on.
Do you know what I was actually thinking about when I first heard it, and I even tweeted it as much, is that, you know, this notion of gaslighting is, you know, a form of manipulation where you sow so many seeds of doubt in a targeted individual population to make them question their own sanity, or to make them question things that they believe themselves. You know, and they used misdirection, denials, contradictions, lying, all in an attempt to muddy the truth so much that they don't even know what's real and what's fake anymore.
Yeah, but
and my putting on my own conspiracy theory, I think that there must be someone in the media sphere or in ZANU who is a master, you know, mass media marketer. Or in other words, a propagandist, because it just seems like gaslighting. It seems like they keep bringing out every week a different story, every week a different angle, so that we don't even know what's true and what's false anymore.
But you see, it's clear that there is an agenda against Kasukwere. I mean, you had 9 out of 10 provinces sign petitions to get him removed as political commissar. Then the president sent a special committee to go and investigate. Investigations are complete. I think there's going to be a Politburo this week where the report of that investigation, which was led by advocate Jacob Mutenda, is going to be tabled, and we'll see what happens there. But it's clear, it's clear that somebody wants him out, and it's also clear that there is a propaganda war going on, and whoever it is powerful enough to use state media to push this propaganda war. Whether it happens, I honestly don't think he will be removed as PC, but I could be wrong. I say so, the only reason I say so is because it's an appointed position and it's appointed by the president. Though the president has, you know, said that if the people, the will of the people, I will follow the will of the people because I serve at their pleasure. You know, we all know that it's in the matrix of power, it's a lot different. So if whoever it is forcing this agenda, can actually sway the president to get him to remove this, it changes the balance of power within ZANU-PF quite seriously, which is why I don't think that he'll be removed. But we'll definitely see what happens. This Malema one, I think it's, yeah, like, as you said, it's gaslighting. It's just trying to cause the situation to spiral a lot more. But this one, out of all the other stories, yeah, maybe, this one seems a bit too far-fetched. I mean, who is Malema really in the Zimbabwean context?
Malema, yeah, who, in what power does he wield in Zimbabwe?
Yeah.
Malema and what arm?
That's the thing, like... You know, if it was plotting with Zuma or plotting with, I don't know, it would have to be
Zuma. Even Kamba would have been a better, Kamba would have been more understandable.
Yeah, because it's just Malema. Like, people here, there's people who like Malema, but there's a lot more people who kind of just, you know, like him for the sake of his controversy, but not to say that he has any influence over people.
Yeah. I don't know. In the far though, the position here, Kasukwere clearly is important because elections are coming very soon, and now the question is, well, half the party seems to be saying we are performing poorly, ngati chinje striker. The other half of the party says ngati chinje striker pakati pe game, we're in the middle of the game, because you unbalance the team and you lose. So I think it's really that's what's happening.
I completely agree. You're gonna have to have a PC who is, it's ideal to have a PC who is wanted by the people. If they fail to do that, I don't know, man, we're just going to have to see. But I'm sure by the time we get to August or so, they'll have sorted out these issues, because then it's full frontal. Everything is campaign, everything. Like, you can't go to primary elections with such a situation, because then you'll have candidates who are imposed, or you'll have candidates who the people are not happy with, and then you are likely to have a Boram Sango.
Yeah, that's what will likely happen. While we're on the ruling party, and the president has been at it again in his travels, I think we alluded to it at the beginning with his comments at the World Economic Forum that was in Durban. Jokes aside, I mean, clearly, you know, for those that don't know, President Mugabe said that in his speech, a clip has been going around where he says that Zimbabwe is the second most developed country in Africa behind South Africa. And there's not much, you know, debunking that needs there. I mean, you can have all sorts of arguments about what index is used. It's clearly not true. Whatever index you want to use, unless maybe you find some obscure, you know, index to use. What I was actually wanted to talk to you about is, do you think that the delegation that went to Durban could really have, you know, put Zim's interests, or put the next 10, 15, 20 years of Zim's interests, represented them well? Like, I don't know. Could you, it seems like you can't send a 93-year-old to where they're talking about the future of Africa and expect us to be represented well.
Well, he is the head of state, so on the fact that he had to go, I agree. That's, you know, that's a given. I think
but not all heads of states go to these meetings.
That's true. That's true. But you know, he's.
What's the point of having a finance ministry if you're going to go to every single event?
No. I completely understand. But what I'm saying is that he's. You know, he likes such events, but you know, that's a debate on his travel and you know, that sort of thing.
Something
but I think you definitely need to have government officials there, because they are the ones who create policy and put policy forward. But you also need to have at such a space people young enough and also people who to pass the baton on to, so to speak. So you need young people there to articulate what it is their aspirations are and what it is they, how they envision the future, because you can't have somebody who is on, you know, not going to be around in 2063, planning for 2063. They can definitely set some foundation and, you know, that aspect of it, but they can't. They won't be there to make sure that in 2063 it actually happens. So you need people who are going to be part of the team. You need people who are going to be there at the beginning, and you need people who are going to be there at the end whenever these plans come to fruition. Our team, comprised mainly of government officials, I think we had like five ministers there.
We had
Minister Chinamasa, Minister Bima of Industry, Obed Mpofu of Economic Planning, and Foreign Affairs Minister Simbambe Ngegwi. So, I don't know, and the head of state.
Look, I don't have a problem with the ministers going to, I mean, obviously, you know, for anyone that's been to a conference, I mean, I haven't been to one of this magnitude, but, you know, most conferences, the meetings around, not necessarily in the conference, are they important. So I see value in a mines minister going to the World Economic Forum, even if he's not even speaking or anything, because the people you get to meet and mingle with. I just, and it's the point, I mean, obviously the point has been made and we can move on after this. I just feel that it's getting worrying when we keep thinking that, you know, someone, our president, will be able to speak to our desires, our needs, and our future.
Yeah, no, I in that regard, I understand where you're coming from, being the person of our president. But I don't, what's the word I'm looking for? Technically speaking, there's nothing wrong with it. But in our context, there's a lot left to be desired. There were also a couple of other people that were there. Jonas Mushosho, who is head of emerging markets at Old Mutual. Farai Gundan was there. Vimbaika Jesse was also there. So there were some young people as well. It's just with Zimbabwe, one of the major issues seems to be around policy, and that's what's holding us back. If we look at the, let me see if I can just pull it up quickly. It was the, where is it? Okay, I can't seem to find it. But in terms of Zim, what we are struggling with is policy, and policy is led by the government, and government is led by the head of state and government. So our inconsistencies are to deal with what's happening in our leadership, and that's where there needs to be a fix.
That's fair enough. I guess we can, talk about those that would be our leaders. And in the opposition yesterday on what is it, on the 6th of May, it seems as if a lot of the opposition leaders, a lot of the opposition parties that people would say are serious or are more than just a name on a letterhead, addressed joint rallies. You had quite popular personalities. Your Tsvangirais was there, Dr. Mjuru Joyce was there, the leader of Transform Zimbabwe was there, who I'm forgetting his name, Alton Mungoma of New Democrats of Zimbabwe, Tendai Biti of PDP, and so on and so forth. they had they addressed a women's forum meeting that was organized by, I assume, women within their parties, because if you have the look, the crowd is quite mixed, different political parties, t-shirts and everything like that. And then they went on to address a rally that was organized by the youth amongst the different parties as well. It seems as if there is some movement towards a formal coalition over and above the MOUs that were signed with between Dr. Mujuru and the MDC, Dr. Mujuru's MPP and the MDC, and Walsh Mngobe's MDC, and Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC. So it seems that the idea of a coalition, the working relationship of a coalition, has well and truly finally taken root, and I don't see how people can now walk back these meetings, walk back these events, walk back moving and being seen in the public and say we don't want to be in a coalition anymore.
So here's my thing, coalition, it's something that, has been called for, and it's good to see the hand-holding and them going to events and them speaking. And as I've always said, a strong opposition leads to a much better democracy. My question now on this coalition is, what is its strategy first and foremost, and also, is it going to be structured as one party? So political parties put out manifestos, they put out their objectives and how they intend to govern. Do they all agree on those issues? Because, it can be great, we're all hand-holding and rallying and they win the election, and then straight after, it's factionalism within this coalition because we are not agreed on policy issues, we're not agreed on, all these sort of things. Like, that's what I'm interested in finding out now, is how do they reconcile their different positions and ideologies and thinking?
I think as far as I can tell, from my conversations with a number of different people, who are somewhat well versed in these areas is that right now it seems it's an election pact. It's an election coalition. It's a coalition for the election. It doesn't necessarily mean that they will govern together. And what that means is that if, for example, you have these different parties, they get into parliament, but the president has still got the prerogative to pick his ministers and everything like that. So if they do support one presidential candidate, which I think is likely, will bilaterally try and argue for positions and argue for things that they want with him. If he goes on to win, he has his prerogative whether he's going to keep those promises to the individuals in the coalition in terms of the other party presidents, or whether he's going to pick a cabinet from his own parliament, from his own party. And what will happen is if they don't have a majority in parliament, if he decides to go it alone and pick a cabinet that is not inclusive, then he will have a very tough time governing if he doesn't have parliament. And, you know, I mean, Zim, obviously, we've seen it's a bit unique with Mugabe because he does almost sort of rule by executive order, if you were to say that. But we're yet to see a situation where someone wouldn't have the same hold on power and on the institutions, with the institutions operating independently. So I think that's where I see this going right now. It might change, but I don't see it being a decision. We're now becoming one party. I think it's an election agreement. It's an election coalition. After that, after the election is either won or lost, then they will have to renegotiate what is happening after that.
So what happens with, okay, the presidential election, I get. You have one candidate running for president. What then happens at the parliamentary level and Senate and that sort of thing? Because
I think that's,
because yeah. if the argument is don't split the vote at presidential level, is not the same argument if you have, you know, the parties now are fielding PDP fields, MDCT fields, NPP fields, UNPF fields at parliamentary level as well.
I agree, and here's what becomes the question is that do you have internal primaries which will likely be very divided and very divisive. If they decide to go through a primary process, I doubt the coalition will survive. Or do you close each other in a room and allocate seats, and then you're obviously going to have one or two or three or four, you know, rebels that decide to run as independents or decide to run under their party banner in against the wishes of the party, but you somehow have a way of making it work? Because the major problem is that people vote down a ballot. If you're going to vote for Tsvangirai as president, you're likely going to vote for your MDCT, a member of parliament, and so on and so forth. So it'll be a hard sell to try and split the ballots that way. Lots of education, but I don't see it not working. I think there's enough time to come to a solution.
Yeah, I mean, people do vote down the ballot, but at the same time, you can then get to the ballot and there is no MDCT name, and there's the NPP name, and, you know, it's somebody who left ZANU who you don't want to vote for. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I do hope they are open, for lack of a better term, or engaging. There seems to be a lot of secrecy when it comes to issues of the opposition, and rightly so. I can understand, you know, you don't want to put your cards out on the table, lay your cards bare on the table. But I think there should be, in the interest of transparency, and the interest of, and the interest of, and the interest of engaging Zimbabweans, or speaking to Zimbabweans and understanding what it is that the needs of the Zimbabweans are, I do hope that they are a lot more engaging. It's like the issue with the MOUs. I bring this up because the MOUs, there have been no details of what is contained in the MOUs that have that I've come across. And I, as if I'm not mistaken, they are not going to, until, you know, they want to, are not going to release. I think a number of people have asked and they haven't been, you know, privy to what actually is in that. But, you know, I think there's a lot of Zimbabweans who are on the fence, who are looking for something to, you know, for a side you to see. Go to. So I hope that they're a lot more engaging, not necessarily saying, guys, this is our strategy, here's an open book, but just, you know, communicating with people.
Do you know what I think and I hope happens? And I appreciate people want more details. People want a lot of these things, right? But I tend to find in the few elections that I've actually been in Zim, and including, 2008, which was a different situation where it was very, very hopeful. And I was 18, so I have rose-tinted glasses about this. But it seemed as, from the political side of things, as if, and I was also well embedded in the MDC at the time, so I might have been only seeing what was happening with the MDC. But as it was leading up to the election, momentum for the party rose, as in more and more people were coming out, more and more people were wearing their T-shirts. There was a sort of slow roll momentum that was building up towards the election. And I think the only way a coalition is going to be successful is if they start building that momentum like a train, picking people up along the way. And all these concerns are true, but eventually the more they are out, the more they're holding hands, the more they're talking, the more they're in the media, the more people are going to say, oh yes, that's fine. So it's an interesting thing to see if they can successfully keep that momentum and not be derailed by factionalism.
Yeah, no, I do believe that, you know, we are actually more than a year out before the election, and it's weird. It shouldn't be normal that, you know, this is the one thing we are actually talking about, but a whole year out. But I suppose as we get closer to the elections, then we'll get a lot more information about what's happening and that sort of thing. And, you know, it is still very young and still people trying to figure each other out. But
speaking of MOUs, the opposition, if I'd call them opposition activists, I think I would be getting a few inboxes.
Are they not opposition activists?
But if they oppose the opposition at some point in time, they're also, they're not, no, I mean, let's not be unfair to them. They're not opposition activists. They're citizens activists. They're citizens movements. They're there to voice concerns and not to oppose, but to build. I should become their spokesperson.
Tongue in cheek. That was tongue. My comment was tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they came together as well.
Yeah, so this is this flag, Tajamuka, Zimbabwe Yadzoka, She Votes, the Vendors Association of Zimbabwe, and et al. Also came together to sign a memorandum of understanding, to have a press conference, because that's what we do in Zim, we do press conferences.
The people must know. How else can you speak to the people if not through a press conference?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's necessary.
Did you tune in? It was live on Facebook. I didn't tune in though.
I watched some of it. I watched the Harare one with Pastor Evan speaking, and Promise, who we hope to have on the show soon, answering the questions, and they were speaking on how it is an understanding of collective action, of moving together and collectivizing their efforts in the lead up to the election. So no longer will this gown host a march, a demonstration, and this flag not be aware of it. I think it was also a call for collective action from the people. And also they were at pains to clarify that this is not the formation of a political party. Pastor Evan was quite clear about that. It's not a political party, it's not a political movement, it's still a a citizens' movement. Although the semantics, in my opinion, are just quite confusing.
So again, my question to everyone, I suppose, and them specifically, is to what end? So what are you hoping to achieve come 2018 election, Yacho? If we're building up to the 2018 election, what are you hoping to achieve when you get there? It's no longer just a citizens' movement to put pressure on the government to act right, because, you know, there is this election that people are focused on. And She Votes, for example, is, you know, campaigning to get people registered and that sort of thing. I know other citizens' movements work as pressure groups or intend to work as pressure groups. I don't know how much our government is responsive to pressure, but in a manner in which they would want. But to what end? What are they looking to get out of the 2018 election? How are they engaging the political players with whatever it is that they want? What are their objectives, and what is the strategy?
I think from what I heard from the conversation, unfortunately, I don't have a transcript of it in front of me. But generally, it's the citizens' movement is to for better governance, for better service delivery, and this will apply before and after the elections. I think the election focus is in understanding that there needs to be a change, which Pastor Evan didn't say. So anyone who's ever used to criticize him and say that we don't have the pastor saying the government needs to change, he has said that. He said there needs to be a change, so I think it's also in governance and holding people accountable. In terms of strategies, I wouldn't know. I think they have shown, we can only assume how they're doing it in terms of the Facebook lives, the media, and so on. But I don't know. I don't know about some grand strategy to agitate and change things for the coming election or campaign with the opposition. I don't know.
You know what I wish? I wish I could travel the country and sort of take stock of the political mood of citizens all over. It's very easy to get wrapped up in this web this web and this notion that what's happening in Harare is the mood everywhere else. So I really would like just to get a sense of what people are thinking in different parts of the country. I know there's places where the real politics is happening between two ZANPF MP candidates who are really vying for the primary seat or whatever it is, and that's just in that particular ward or that particular constituency. That's what people are concerned about. Other places, it could be, you know, any other things. It could be what's happening with the MDC. It could be what's happening with, you know, there might even be other citizens' movements out there that don't get a lot of media attention, because a lot of these things happen on social media and then they make it to mainstream media from there. So I don't know how I'd go about it, but it would be interesting to see if we could capture just a general picture of what's happening in different parts of the country or in all 10 provinces or whatever it is.
Yeah, I guess the only people that have really done something like that is Afrobarometer. And I think they have a number of interesting findings, and which I didn't prepare, I haven't really had had a look at it. All I knew was about the political, so the economic questions, and you know, where only 43%, or maybe not only 43%, I don't have context to compare it to, but 43% of Zimbabweans describe the economic conditions as very bad or fairly bad. What's interesting is, this is according to Afrobarometer, that 79% of Zimbabweans prefer democracy to any other kind of government. So there's at least 21% of Zimbabweans who don't prefer democracy.
Yeah, I might be one of them.
Pardon?
I said I might be one of them.
Or you prefer your strong men and totalitarians.
You know for a fact that I'm not for strongman politics and totalitarianism. But I'm just joking.
So yeah, no. They released a press statement on the 3rd of May, actually. So they do have, this is also through Mass Public Opinion Institute, MPO, and Afrobarometer, and some of the things I'm just having a look here. And I think if anyone is interested in having a full look at these statistics, they're the only ones which are semi, I mean, a lot of people have put up problems with the methodology of Afrobarometer and their local partner organizations, their methodology, their sample sizes, and the statistical analysis they get there. But that's another argument completely. But yeah, Afrobarometer.org will show you, could see 88% of Zimbabweans say the government is doing poorly in terms of creating jobs. Only 9% think that the government is doing well in that aspect. I don't know which 9% of Zimbabweans think the government is doing well.
Civil servants. Aspect.
Oh, fair enough. So
shout out to my civil servant homies.
So 86% of the rural areas think the government is doing badly, but 93% of urban areas think the government is doing badly.
It's quite interesting, so, actually. Yeah, I'm going to take a look at this Afrobarometer survey to see what's actually happening there. Another one I found recently is the Africa Competitiveness Report that was on the World Economic Forum, that the World Economic Forum did. And one of the most problematic factors for doing business, and this is something we've stated on this podcast time and time again, is actually policy instability. So they rated out of 28, and policy instability is at 24.6. Access to financing, 14.5. So that's about half of the problems. Corruption is third. Inefficient government bureaucracy is fourth. Inadequate supply of infrastructure. Restrictive labor regulations, tax rates, foreign currency regulations, and government instability are some of the other ones. But you know, we've spoken about policy instability, we've spoken about how we just have a government that doesn't speak with one voice, and it happens time and time again. They actually call each other out in public these days. There's no shy, you know, it's dog eat dog. Whoever wants to say something can come out and say it. We can't move forward in such a situation.
We can't in such a statement. Yeah, no, it's the sentiment is crazy.
You know, for me, it would be different if, yes, you have bad policies, but you're all behind your bad policies. You know, everyone is clear that you know what, but we all support it. But when you have actual cabinet ministers calling each other out in public spaces, I really wonder then what happens behind closed doors. Like, there seems to be, how do you function behind closed doors? Because you get into the meeting and clearly there's beef between Minister X and Minister Y. So they are not going to be if one ministry needs the support of the other ministry, then clearly that's not going to happen, because there's, you know, this beef, and this is where it starts, is that you don't have a unified government, and it's not going to work. And so, yeah, I do hope that something gives, and, you know, someone brings some sort of unity to the government.
Yeah, of course, and the only person that can do it is the president himself. I know we were talking about economic things, you know, lest I'm accused of being partisan beyond belief. We must acknowledge that a couple of crazy things were said this week. We've already spoken about the president saying that Zimbabwe is the second most developed country in Africa. We also need to, before we're told that we ignore people's things, that Tapio Mashakada, who is the shadow minister of finance for the MDC, and a member of parliament for, what is it? Is it Hatfield? What is it? Yeah. Said that in the first 100 days of the MDC being in power, they would create a $100 billion economy. which I don't know if he knows what $100 billion is. I don't know.
He's probably stuck in 2008, man. He's thinking same dollars. Guys, $100 billion.
$100 billion. So I mean, look, I would
in 3 months. So I don't dispute the fact that Zimbabwe can become $100 billion economy. South Africa's what, $300 billion. But in 3 months, we go from a $14 billion economy right now, currently, to $100 billion. That is,
I mean, look. While I'm on it, I might let me just give you. I think that the opposition responses, rebuttals, because I'm on a number of other, you know, groups, and I have conversations with people. The argument is that. And I suppose it's true. He didn't say that the economy would be valued at $100 billion. He said he would create somehow get $100 billion for the economy. By
even then,
Euro
in
bonds,
3 months, who's giving?
Euro bonds in deep capital markets, which to me sounds jargonistic at best. But I mean, he does have a doctorate. So maybe
no, but Henry, listen. Who is giving a new government, right, that has only been in power for 3 months, $100 billion? I don't dispute that a new government has the potential to turn Zimbabwe around. But if I am an investor, I first want to see how you function before I am putting, before I'm giving you $100 billion. Whether, you know, it's not to say that there is that. You know, the opposition doesn't have the capacity. It's just the time frame that I think is, you know, very questionable and very aspirational. But I think, you know, you have to, don't throw around statements. People have thrown around 2.2 million jobs and it comes to bite you in the ass. So, you know, we then say $100 billion economy, and for the first year, no one wants to touch Zimbabwe because everyone's trying to see how you handle the position you're in, and now everyone is complaining because everyone wants a share of their $100 billion.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, that's basically how what he did say. You know, in the same week, you know, our main source of forex in the country was bashed and tear gassed by the police. Ah, you know what, like.
Yeah, this week was actually quite wild. So, yeah, the farmers at tobacco farmers who are at TSF wanted their money. So the RBZ at the start of the farming season had said that farmers would be able to withdraw $1,000 in cash, and then they would get the rest deposited into their bank accounts. Then it went down to 500, then it went down to 300, then it went down to 100.
The hundreds.
Because banks don't have cash. So it was...
The RBZ doesn't have cash.
Yeah, RBZ doesn't have cash because all the bond notes are in full circulation and they're wrapped up in in the informal sector now. So RBZ doesn't have cash. Banks don't have cash. So the farmers couldn't get their cash. And then there was, you know, protests and stuff at TSF, which is one of the auction floors. And so then they had to... the police were brought in because it was getting quite hostile.
The people need to understand, and I don't know how we can stress it, is that Zim has a currency shortage because we don't have productive capacity. We have no one buying our goods, so we don't have access to foreign currency. One of our main areas, one of the main ways we get foreign currency, if not the biggest foreign currency draw in the country, is tobacco. The government buys tobacco from the farmers at a set price. They pay the farmers and then they go and sell that tobacco. The government has bought tobacco and not given these farmers cash, or some of them not given some of them cash, is predictably going to be paid for this. And, you know, where is that foreign currency going to go? To other things, of course. But essentially what it seems like to me is that they take your tobacco, they sell it to a foreigner, they get paid in real dollars, they put a bunch of zeros through an RTGS system in your accounts. That actual hard currency is either, you know, used for in emergency payments or somehow filtered through the elite, and the market never really sees it. And it's like the biggest Ponzi scheme in the country. It's not Yamagai, or it's not the MMMs of your world. It's not World Ventures. It's the government. It's the RBZ.
How are you going to say Magaya is a Ponzi scheme? Shame on you. You're going to get...
Have you not seen Magaya's Ponzi scheme? Ponzi scheme.
You're going to get people not listening to... You're going to get protesters in our studio here because these people will say that you are... Some don't speak ill of the prophet. But yeah, no, it's a very serious situation that's happening with the farmers, and I really don't know what the RBZ is going to do. I have no clue, and what voodoo economics are going to happen, whether they're going to print more bond notes, probably that's what they're going to do. But I really don't know. Or maybe they're going to borrow it. Trafigura gave us $1 billion to clear our debts, so I don't know.
That's true, because I've read reports that Trafigura has refused that they had anything to do with that.
I don't know. That's the last thing I heard. I'll have to look it up, and then we can probably talk about it.
There's an official statement I saw where Trafigura says they have nothing to do with.
I don't know. Let's see if we can pull it up quickly on the thing.
But yeah. So anyway, basically, what needs to happen is Mangudya needs to resign.
Yeah, we'll see about that, eh?
Yeah, there's a Voice of America article that says there's a statement that says they don't have anything to do with it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. We'll then just have to see what happens. We really will just have to wait and see. Unfortunately, that's, you know, maybe Mangujika will have to resign. If I don't know, Zimbabwe is just. yeah. In other wacky statements, I suppose it's not wacky, but Tokozani Kube had a slip of the tongue. I don't know who she was.
A slip of the brain.
A slip of the brain. I don't know who she was addressing. But she was speaking, and she says, "Zimbabwe, you know, we're in." The quote that everyone will quote onto was that I am in politics to make money. But the context of what she was saying was, you know, everyone wants to make money. Nobody wants to be poor. So we all go into different things to make money. And we are in politics to make Zimbabwe better in order for us to make money. Yeah, that's what I understood it. So we're in politics to make Zimbabwe better so that we can all be wealthier. That's the context of what I understood she was saying. But she did... The soundbite will say, I am in politics to make money. And that's a huge gaffe. You don't say things like that, because those words, they are your words and they will be used against you. And people always say, but the context. But if I go Kurali and I just play that one clip and, you know, thousands of people are there saying, these people, they just want to get into power to make money for themselves. That's what it then comes across as. So, word to our politicians and anyone really in public space:
keep your mind your P's and Q's.
Yeah, dot your T's and cross your I's.
What then is, while we're speaking of political gaffes, that I initially thought the article where, is it Sarah Maoka who said that the Beitbridge Harare Road is only going to be built by ZANU-PF activists?
The one I missed. I'll have to check. But the one I saw was the one that said it's going to create 330,000 jobs.
Yeah.
Those are more numbers. Those are $100 billion economy numbers. Those are $2.2 million job numbers. I don't know why people are obsessed with giving figures. Just don't. Just say this road is going to create jobs by giving a number, and then it after you've done that, they then start to qualify and say, no, not jobs specifically on making the road, but the person arikubika sadza richazotengwane munhu arikugadzira road is also part of the jobs that were created. This is how it's going to be explained. I can guarantee it. You know, just don't give us numbers. Yeah. It's fine.
So
we don't
it was her. It was in that same. You're right. It was in that same interview. Shuai Mahofa, who's the provincial affairs minister of Mafingo and everything, said that recruitment of general labor should be done through local ZANU-PF leadership. We need to screen and take our people only, Mahofa said. District chairperson should have a list of party cadres so that when the program starts, you're ready with the names of our youths.
Partisan politics in national affairs.
So is that this project is going to be at its peak at the end of the year through 2008. You're going to have a bunch of ZANU-PF youths employed on this project.
And they're going to vote. Because they have jobs.
They're going to vote. I don't mind them voting for ZANU. People have a right and a duty to vote for who they want to. What I'm afraid of is that they are organized in such a manner that they make natural areas of intimidation in terms of the way they're already organized, the way they're already going to be paid, the way they already will be drinking together, assumedly. If you know anything, if you've ever been wakamugara kumusha wakapinda pa growth point kana pa ine wano wakushanda pa road wakawande papo, they'll come, and I think it'll make it very difficult for any opposition candidates to find traction if you have roves of youths. That's my actual fear. I don't mind who they vote for, but I'm actually afraid that they'll be used for intimidation, and the money for the road is going to be a payment for things that they might regret later in their lives.
I hope there's someone who can do it. I don't know if court applications can be brought or whatever it is. So such statements are not in national interest, and they shouldn't be made, and such situations shouldn't take place. But it's, you know, perhaps also my naivety that is talking. But we need to root out such things, and they need to be called out. And I do hope that in the next, whenever Parliament starts to sit again, such things can be investigated, even if it is just to have it on record that, you know, this is, we are against such, you know, statements and such things. I don't know how you'd organize it, but we need to, on issues of national development, it needs to move away from being a specific party or whatever it is. We need to force the agenda to be a national agenda. You are a Zimbabwean first before you are a ZANU-PF member or an MDC member or a activist or whatever it is. You are a Zimbabwean first, and we need to put the interests of the Zimbabweans ahead of everything else, because that's the only way that we will get this country moving towards somewhere where we can all be proud of it, regardless of our differences. I mean, you can be a Dynamo supporter and there's a Highlander supporter, but at the end of the day, you all want football in this country to be better than what it is today. So it should work in all forms of life. Is that your differences aside, you all have a shared interest that you want to advance and that you want to see come through. And this is the message that I think every Zimbabwean should take to their politicians and the people that represent them, and reinforce that the interest of the country and the interest of Zimbabweans should always come first ahead of everything else.
Yeah, I can't say it better myself. So I think that might actually be a perfect place to end this week's podcast.
Yeah.
I hope everyone really took that to heart. You guys should be like us. You know, Chris is a United fan and I'm an Arsenal fan. And
and we're playing today.
And that's the worst of his qualities. Thanks the Lord. But
yeah, the worst of my qualities is that I support a winning team. Shame on you.
Mountains are all winning.
Anyway, we won an FA Cup last year, but this is not a Bora podcast. It's not a Bora podcast.
If you want to listen to Bora podcast, you should listen to Mike's Set Match, which is also on the Capital 263 podcast network. You can find them on our website. And also, if you just Google Capital 263, all these podcasts will come up for you. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back every week from now onwards until, you know, until the world ends, if Trump has his way, or until the election. And we're going to have a few guests coming up. If you have any guest suggestions, please let us know. And a big shout out to everyone on the group who participates and has conversations on the group. Very diverse opinions, and I'm learning a lot from you guys. And yeah,
you know, I also think, like, if there are people who would want to join us, because I think, you know, it's always good to get different perspectives from people, not just politicians and that sort of thing. So based on the group, there's some, you know, views that I would never have thought of. So if you're interested, do get in touch, and then we can see what we can do. You can find our Facebook page, Politics and Beyond. You can find us on Twitter at Beyond Poly ZW. My Twitter handle is at Chris Charamba, actually at Chris Charamba on all social media, so you can find me there.
And yeah, at Henry Beattie on all social media. And yeah, thanks for listening, guys, and gals. That's terrible. This is Capital 263. Free to say it.
Free to do it.
Bye. And now. Capital 263.